Welcome to the Intelligent Investment Show.
Matt Dahl of ARPG.
Welcome back, dude.
Thanks. Good to be back. Good to be back. I was gone for about a month dealing with other stuff, and it's good to be back in the chair. No, it's definitely a deja vu all over again. The first 3 months of this year has been just a market driven purely by momentum, largely by the AI narrative, largely by guidance from companies that are participating in AI. You're obviously your NVIDIA's, your Microsoft's and such. And because inflation has been cooling off for so long, and the market really didn't believe that inflation, or the market had believed effectively inflation was just going to head down in a straight line. And inflation is heading down, but nothing ever really happens in a straight line. Okay. And we got some seasonal, basically, effects in the beginning of the year with a lot of people raising prices. So that caused kind of a spike in inflation. And I think the markets had largely thought that maybe we wouldn't see that so much again in March. And we did, not to the extent that we saw in February, January, February, but we did see it. And obviously that caused a bit of a bond market sell-off, causing yields to rise. And we talked, last month, specifically about sort of this line in the sand on 435 on the 10-year treasury. And that's where the market kind of starts to get iffy. It starts to get indigestion right about there. And if you look at the market, it had its peak. The S&P peak close was 5254 on March 28th. Okay. Treasuries that day were 4.20. The following Monday, the close of treasuries is 4.32. And then over the next subsequent 6 days, it went to 457. And you can just see that the S&P just stalled and started to chop around. And it culminated into what could be, it's a little early to tell, and it would be a very minor pullback, okay, as of last Friday at 49.67 on the S&P, which, truth be told, we entered the market with, lots of new money on that day. We've been holding back new money entering the market since the end of February, simply because the market, as we discussed before, the market got a little overheated on that AI narrative, and it didn't give a lot of room in case there was bad news that was going to come down the road, i.e. if inflation popped back up or earnings were a little bit weak, yield rose. There just wasn't a lot of room to wiggle there. And when we got a little bit of a little bit of bad news, bang, we got that 5% on the S&P effectively and about 7% on the NASDAQ. And is that the bottom? I don't know. But is that, good is not the enemy of perfect. So from those levels, call it a 49.75 S&P, 15.350 on the NASDAQ, those look good. Those look good 6-12 months out to sort of allocate new money into. RSI had pulled back, all of those things. And I also wanted to make sure that we were allocating prior to earnings, because earnings will be good. In fact, Meta, it had great earnings, but it pulled back almost 12% the next day after announcing earnings. They were up, they were down like 15% after hours when they announced earnings. Earnings
was Meta?
Yeah, Meta.
So they had a good earnings report. But yeah, then
they were $4.71 a share on $4.32 consensus estimates, but down from the $5.32 the prior quarter, largely due to their massive. Basically, what it is, they gave guidance. They gave guidance that revenue was going to be about 37.75 billion the following quarter, whereas the street had it over about 38.5 billion. And they were going to do a massive investment cycle into AI, obviously causing earnings per share to go down. But that's still a 27% increase in revenue over a year ago as far as sales. Next quarter, we're getting about 18%. So the market's in my opinion overreacted. I mean, it's a phenomenal company, phenomenal growth, and you're still buying it at 20 times earnings.
Yeah. So let's talk about that for just a minute there, but where you touched on the market was just, you know, ran a little bit overheated for a little while. And I think I had kind of mentioned on the last show, I believe I used the line kind of price for perfection. There's certain trends that you can spot, and you've identified several of them, that 435 treasury level. You can go back and look at September, like September 10th, 12th, somewhere in that range down to like November when treasuries did pop through 435 briefly, the market kind of sold off with it. Same thing here you've seen recently where the same thing, it kind of, like you said, deja vu all over again. So there are some trends that are in place right now. But those two trends we've talked about, treasuries and inflation, and then AI, those are kind of the two competing forces right now. AI is this huge growth force in the economy, but then you've got treasuries and inflation that could be a little bit of a suppressor. So a couple of weeks ago, we were running a little bit too hot, or, you know, at our last show, you said we were kind of running a little bit ahead of ourselves. Now we've come back in a little bit. Where do you see that tug of war right now? And do you think, like, is that 3-5% pullback enough to kind of get your juices flowing and get you excited about putting some back in? Or is it still something where you need that to play itself out for another, you know, 3 months, 6 months, whatever? Because I'm looking at, you know, Meta was down how much on that report?
Yesterday it was down right about 12%, 11-12%.
I mean, yeah. And they missed the number
on
by
earnings
what?
Beat. On an earnings beat, it beat their estimate by 9%.
Oh, that was on earnings beat.
They beat their earnings estimate by 9%. $4.71 on $4.32 consensus estimate.
Okay, I think they gave guidance they were going to spend a lot of money
in AI.
Okay, yeah. So 471 on a 432 estimate, it goes down 12%. See, that's concerning. Like, and I think you even said that at one point. Like, when the market goes down on good news, that's sort of a red flag. Does that give you concern, or is the fact that we were down 5% already kind of, are we getting back a little bit closer to a neutral level in your mind?
Well, I think specific to Meta, I think it's idiosyncratic to Meta with their CapEx cycle. And I think, okay, I think the street just basically sold off until, obviously, and here's the thing, in my opinion, I think they're going to be back to where they were around $500 a share sometime in May. Okay. You know, I think it was just sort of a knee jerk reaction, but the bigger dollars, they stayed put. We're not going anywhere. It's a great company with great earnings. You know, trying to make, I guess what you're asking is, what does the future hold? Well, it's anyone's guess.
How tight is that margin of error? Are we priced to so much perfection that even a tiny little wiggle is going to be concerning? Or is it, do we have some uncertainty priced in now at this point?
Well, I think some of the froth has sort of been bled off as of last Friday. You know, it's recovered a little bit this week. We're basically, you know, 51.11 as we sit here today. We're up 135 S&P points, call it 3% from last week, 3.5% from last week. Okay. So the market's already made back over half, almost basically half of what it lost over the 3 week period. So it comes back pretty quick. The margin of error, I guess that's a moving target, right? Because let's talk about AI and let's talk about interest rates. What does AI do? AI is a tremendous revenue earnings juggernaut. Inflation, interest rates, that's obviously competition. Inflation means those companies with higher growth rates and lower current earnings, their future earnings are a lot further out for the same purchasing power with that level of inflation, okay? Which is why they're penalized. And the other side of it is bonds pay a higher yield. Okay, so there's now more competition for equities. I mean, do you want to take, you know, it's like we call it, you know, there's always the equity risk premium. You know, the equity risk premium is normally 4-5%. Okay, which means you have to get 10-12% for a fair equity risk premium above policy rate or a standard bond. Versus when, you know, the 10-year sitting at 1%, the equity risk premium is very, very low. Is the growth of AI, the revenue growth of AI, the earnings growth of AI strong enough to overcome the higher competition provided by bonds? That's where investment is the discipline of relative selection comes in.
Hey, you stuck it back in. It's been a few shows since you got that in there.
you have to find where those earnings growth is strong enough and the current earnings are strong enough to overcome the competition from the bond side, as well as the current earnings are good enough to where there's not going to be a sustained deterioration in share price, right? And Google's a great example. They announced a 20 cent per share dividend on earnings last night. They're up what? Oh my gosh, did we look at it today?
It's up about 10% today.
They're up 10% today. And they announced a $70 billion buyback. That sounds like a lot. That's 3.5% of the company. That's 3.5% market cap. That's all it is. So on a 3.5% buyback, they're up 10%.
Yeah.
Which is a good omen, by the way. When the company's buying their own shares back at these levels, at this market level, they know things that we don't know. They know what's coming. And they've got good people in there that understand what that revenue stream is going to look like. And they know exactly what they're going to be spending against that revenue stream. So they have a pretty good idea of what that share price is going to look like 6, 12, 24, 36 months from now. So that's usually a great omen when they do that. So I think what we have here is, I think it's just the market. I like to call it a wiggle. We had a good market wiggle because we had an inflation and yield wiggle. We went through 435. We went to 470. I think we're done here. Okay. I thought maybe we could get to 455 to 460, but we went to 470. Okay. Now, you know, it's likely going to start rolling back, and it's probably going to start rolling back through August. Inflation, if you look at the core parts of inflation, it's actually fine. Okay. There's two components to inflation that are being really stubborn. One in particular that's being incredibly stubborn, which is auto insurance. It's up 22% in a year. Okay. Shelter's up 5.4% in a year. Everything else combined averages 1.76%. So when those two start to relax, the whole sort of the inflation now is sitting on two very shaky pillars of auto insurance and shelter. And we know with the higher interest rates, okay, that's going to cool shelter down. I'm not saying that housing prices are going to come down, but they'll likely stop going up as fast, right? So that will cool that side of it down, which is a big component of CPI. Auto insurance companies are insuring more expensive cars than they were 3 years ago, which is why the cost of auto insurance is higher. Okay. That will likely roll over pretty quickly. Okay. And I don't think that has necessarily anything to do with interest rate, but as interest rates are higher, car prices can't go up as fast. Thus, the cost to insure those cars is going to stabilize and normalize. So I expect that to come down too. So I think we'll probably be looking at normalized month over month inflationary numbers probably next month, June, July. And I really believe we're going to see that yield pull back probably to the very low fours into the upper threes by August. And I think it'll chop around. And I really think we have a good chance of seeing a low three print, maybe even a high two print on the 10-year by end of this year. And that a lot of that will depend on Treasury issuance. If we continue to print this money, we just had a $70 billion monthly Treasury option. That's crazy. The amount of yield that you have to attach to that, the tail on those options goes so long to get the yield high enough to attract the buyers. That has to go down. We have to stop doing that. If we don't do that, then rates are never going to come down. So I'm not trying to be political here, but there's just been a lot of bond issuance by the Treasury to pay for, you know, all of these different things.
When you talk about that equity risk premium, but let's say that interest rates were at 2% at some point and the market wants a 5% premium to be in equity. So in other words, I can put money in the bank and earn 2% safe, risk-free, or I can go to the market and I need 5% more than that, that's 7%. Okay, so I need 7% in the market to equate to, you know, my comfort level. Okay, well, if that interest rate moves up 3% to 5%, and now I can earn 5% in the bank or in treasuries, wherever, and I still want that 5% premium, well, now I need to earn what? I need to earn 10% in the equity market. Okay, simple enough. 3%, how big of a difference can that be? Well, here's the math. If I have a dollar of earnings and I need a 7% yield, I'm willing to pay $14.28 for a dollar of earning to get a 7% yield. If I need a 10% yield, well, then I'm only willing to pay $10 for a dollar of earnings. 10 divided by 14.28 is a 30% reduction in what I'm willing to pay. Okay. So putting all of that into one package, even a 3% difference in interest rates, all things being equal in a finance textbook, would bring equity prices down 30% to equate to that, right? So that's, I'm not saying that, I'm not trying to use such big numbers for effect there. I'm just saying to paint the picture of the importance of interest rates and how interconnected it is to equity prices, that's how sensitive it is. It's not, you may think 2% versus 5%, it doesn't say, I mean, yeah, it's a big difference, but it's not, I wouldn't think it would make a 30% difference in equity prices, but that a 3% rise in interest rates in that example is a 30% headwind to equity prices. Am I wrong?
The missing component of that equation is the growth factor of the equity. Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, let's say you have using that same example, right? And we go from 2% to 5%. So we would need 10% in 10, 11% in return to give you a fair equity risk premium against that 5% interest rate. Okay, what does that mean? That means we have to look at companies, equities that have a growth rate of at least 20%, okay, against a multiple of 10 times. Okay, so what you have to look for then is you have to have growth now that overcomes that multiple, that equity multiple. So at a 10% return, you know, you're going to have something that, you know, probably grows by 20% a year.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
And has already good, strong current earnings. Okay. That way, I mean, so it's not a direct correlation of if this goes up 3% and then you back that 3% into the equity risk premium, it could pull, you know, it drops, it, you know, it's going to drop a multiple from 14.25 down to 10 times earnings. Okay.
Right.
Okay. Because if that company is at 14.25 times earnings, but it's only growing by, you know, 7%. Okay. Well then, yeah, if it goes up 3%, it's going to knock that multiple way down because it's not growing up. But if that same company is trading at, you know, call it 15 times earnings and it's growing by 30%, well, that's, you know, that has a 0.5 price to, that has a 0.5 price to growth ratio.
So well,
there's a lot of margin for error in that room. But if it's the other side and you've got like a 3-to-1 price to growth ratio. So it's trading at 5 times earnings. I'm sorry, it's trading at 15 times earnings. It's growing up 5%. Okay. Right. Well, now those earnings for 3 years down the road, you know, they're basically the same. So that's absolutely going to drop that down 25-30% versus the company that's growing by 30% in 2.5 years. That company, that 15 times earnings, is you're actually buying it for 8.
So that's right, because
that's where your margin lives, right? And that's why it's so important to look. We talked about this last time. That's why guidance is so important, and we have to be able to look at sort of the delta of guidance provided by the analyst to say, hey, you know, if we look at, you know, in NVIDIA earnings and we, you know, we have sort of a delta that's pretty tight. We kind of know what these earnings are going to look like. Versus a company like, I don't know, SoFi Technologies, where it could be all over the place. We can't mm-hmm. use SoFi because the guidance just isn't there to be able to price that in. So if something does happen, I got margin for error because I know, okay, yeah, there's going to be probably a 2-3-4 week, you know, bounce around wiggle in the share price, but we know the earnings are going to come through on the other side and eat that up anyway, right?
Right.
Again, SoFi, I don't mean to pick on SoFi. I don't know, but I've not done that on SoFi, but if, you know, if one company say they're going to earn, you know, 15 cents a share and the other, you know, maybe JP Morgan says they're going to earn, I don't know, $3.15 a share. Well, we can't use that because we don't know what that real long-term growth rate really looks like. This is where professional money managers, frankly, get their value, where they provide value to their clients. Is nothing is an exact science. And we talked about this before, where it's an art and a science. You have to be able to fold that earnings growth in to that equity risk premium in a rising interest rate environment and see what that really looks like. And know it's not going to be a straight line, and know it's not going to be, you know, there's going to be some consolidation and some choppy patterns, but that happens. You know, it's like GDP. GDP came out yesterday, 1.6% for the first quarter. So, of course, everyone in the world is now calling it stagflation. It's not stagflation. This is a normalization of GDP. I mean, the last quarter, Q4, we were 3.4%. Q3 of 2023 was 4.9%. So the last three quarters combined is 3.3%. The last four quarters combined is 3%. So yeah, it was a little softer, but that tends to happen. When, you know, the markets started doing well last year, people started feeling better. People started spending money, and they spent the money they were going to spend. And maybe this year they're consolidating. They're going into an election year. People hear all the bad news going into the election year, so they tend to tighten up. So you have half the country think the world's coming to an end. You know, the other half the country.
Well, actually, I think all of the entire country thinks there's a 50% chance that the world comes to an end.
Exactly. Right? Everyone thinks that, you know, no matter whose side you're on, if the other guy wins, life as we know it is over.
Election years are always interesting to me because they're, that's all you hear is 50% chance the world's coming to an end, basically, one way or the other. And it's, you know, I don't care which side you're on. That's not, you know, we're going to be fine one way or the other. But it's that's all you're going to hear for the next 6 months.
Yeah. I mean, Apple, Google, Microsoft, Amazon, NVIDIA, Home Depot, Walmart, you name it, Costco, those CEOs, those CFOs, the leadership of those companies, as my dad, they don't give a hoot who's in office. Okay. They're going to make money for those companies, for their shareholders, and they know how to do it. Okay. And here's the thing, whatever you like to do, whether it's buy a bunch of camping gear and go hiking, go out to dinner with your family all the time, you know, go racing, have a race car, go horseback riding, whatever it is that you spend your money on. If Trump gets into office, are you going to stop doing those things? If Biden stays in office, are you going to stop doing those things? No, you're still going to spend that money. Okay.
Yeah.
And that's what really matters, is those earnings. We have earnings growth. We have earnings growth tracking this year for 245, 246 already. And I think we're probably going to end closer to 250 than 245. Okay. Next year is looking to be 270 to 275. So, I mean, that's just great earnings growth. We've got a lot, big populations coming in, you know, into their peak income and spending years. They're just, and these are people that grew up, you know, in the, they grew up in the 90s and then the 2000s. So they lived a life of convenience, and they have demands. They like, you know, I mean, I would say the best singular example of just, I have to have what I want when I want, no matter what I'm doing, is, remember, and I saw a few of them in Chicago when I was out there. They're called that Capital One Cafes. Remember that commercial?
Oh,
you
yeah.
Go into Capital One and they have a, you know, they have a coffee bar and you can buy
donuts. Are those a real thing? I've never actually
seen one. Oh, yeah. They're real. Yeah,
I've not seen one.
Yeah. I've not seen any in Las Vegas. They might have some here. But when I was in Chicago, of course, I was downtown. I walked by two or three of them. And that's such a great testament to the demand that Americans have at any given moment in the day doing any given activity. I'm going to the bank for whatever reason. Okay. Well, I can bank on my phone. Why do I need to go to a branch unless I need something specific like cash or whatever. So for the few instances where you would need to go to a bank, an actual branch, well, I can't just go to a bank and do my banking business. When I'm there, I also want to sit and have coffee and eat a muffin and BS with my friends. I, you know what I mean? It's just, there's demand built inside of demand, if that makes sense. And,
yeah.
And that's, well, just, to your that's, point, cool. That's how everything is now. So it's just not going away.
Well, and to your point earlier about, you know, the CEOs and the CFOs of these great companies that you're talking about there, you know, I like to use sports and especially football analogies, I guess. So a good quarterback, coach, offensive coordinator, whatever, they're not going to build an offense around getting what they want from the opposition. But a good defense or a good offense in football is going to be able to react to what they see. They're going to have plan A if they see this, and they're going to have plan B if the defense gives them this. A good leadership of a good company is going to be the same way. They've got a plan for how they're going to attack their growth strategy if Trump's in office, and there's a slightly different plan that they might have if Biden's in office. And that's just one of a million different variables that they're weighing back and forth one day versus the next. So you're right. People aren't going to spend money differently based on one person being in office or the other. You're betting on the leadership of those companies that you're investing in.
And frankly, I think the market to its wisdom is seeing that. The market has made sort of peace with this higher rate regime. You know, I mean, here we are at 470. And market's at 51.15 on the S&P. The NASDAQ is just banging on 16,000 again, right? So is that the equity market getting ahead of the bond market now? Is that the equity market saying, rates are going to roll over? But if they don't, have they made peace with these higher rates? They may have. You know, I mean, the economy is that good. Earnings are that strong. To where, you know, I don't think anyone's willing to gamble with sitting on the sidelines for too long and saying, hey, you know, I'm going to wait for the 10 year to come down to, you know, 4% or below 4%. And I want the 2 year to come down to, you know, 425 before I'm willing to put money back in this market. You do that, this market's gone. This market's at 5,400 by the time that happens. And we know, and again, relative selection, I'm going to buy the positions that I know are going to be strong and go up no matter what, So, you know, it's one of those things where market timing never, ever works. You can have sort of a feeling, you know what, markets have just, they're no longer fair value. They're overvalued and they've gone too far too fast. And I'm not going to sell this market, but I wouldn't necessarily allocate new money into this market, which is where we were effectively, call it from late February until April 19th. And it got a pullback. The market could go up the next couple of days, turn around, flip right back and go the other way. And that's okay because we're looking at it 6 months, 12 months, 18, 24, 36 months out anyway. But, you know, what we want to do is we want to give the new money a fair shot, you know. And that's sort of the art side of this. There's no reason to it. You just kind of got to know.
Right. So, I've been trying to build this up in my head as you've been talking here. So, work with me on this, I guess, a little bit. We'll see how much of it sticks. But if you go back to like day one of stock market school, okay, whether that was a finance class, a business class, a securities exam, whatever. When you're learning through this, okay, if I've got a stock, do you want to buy it or not? Well, first thing I'm going to ask is, well, what's the price? If I say it's 100 or I say it's 1,000, does it make a difference? Not really, unless you've only got $900 to your name. It doesn't really matter. So price is the first component. Okay, but I tell you, okay, it's $100. Do you want to buy it? Next question that you should be asking is, well, I don't know, how much money does it earn or how much do they earn? Okay, well, it could be $5 or $50. That's relative selection, right? I would happily pay $100 for a company that's making $50 more so than I would the one that's making five. But there's another question. How fast are we growing the company? Is that $50 always going to be $50? And because the $5, if it's doubling every year, then that's going to overtake it at some point in the future. How fast are we growing it? And then even beyond that, we're going to have one more level. Okay, it's $100. It's $10 a share of earnings. It's growing at 20% a year. Two companies, exact same. Which one should I buy? I'm going to buy the one that's got the least amount of risk, which is back to what you mentioned earlier with the how predictable are these earnings? If you've got 300 analysts that all have a pretty tight band on what they see as the earnings, that's reliable. If there's four analysts and one's got a price target of $1.60 and another one's got a price target of $120. Well, that's all over the map. So that's a lot of risk. So you got price, you got earnings, you've got growth, and you've got risk. And then my point for bringing this up is that whenever I ask you questions, I'm not so much trying to pin you down to a market prediction. I'm trying to help illustrate as well as we can how sensitive these things are. Again, I'm not calling for a 30% pullback in the market because interest rates go up 3% over some period of time. I'm just illustrating that that affects earnings. That affects how you're going to discount back the growth rate. That also affects the risk factor. All of these things are so interconnected and interdependent to each other that that's why you see that volatility in the market. And I'm going to button up this little mini rant here by saying that's why you're paying people like you, or investors are paying folks like you that have the experience to know how to navigate those things, and also not to overreact to every little blip on the radar, right? It's going to, you are, that's why we're looking 6, 12, 18 months down the road with our forecasts, because you can't overreact to every single thing you see in the market because they are so interconnected and so sensitive. You have to wait till you see a trend and then sort of react to those trends.
Yeah, and the thing is the market itself, prices things in by the day, by the minute, by the hour, by the second. Okay. And to try to look at the market in any given spot time frame and say, okay, like, what did the market do from April 15th through April 19th? Okay. Well, it went down. Is the market in a downtrend? Yeah, it was from March 28th through April 19th, it was in a downtrend. But yeah, from October 30th to April 19th, it was in one hell of an uptrend.
Yeah.
So you have to segment who you are. Are you an investor? If you're an investor, my line in the sand is 2 years. 2 years, okay? If you're not, you're a trader. Now, if you're a trader, that's a whole different discipline that I don't get involved in, because frankly, that to me is fancy gambling, because you don't care what the earnings are. You don't care what sector of the economy they're in. You don't care what interest rates are. You're going tick by tick. It's here. It should be here. So I'm going to sell it. I'm going to, whatever they do. Okay. And there's people that, you know, I guess have done well at it. I've not seen or heard of anyone. You know, I mean, of course, the Ray Dalios of the world, the David Teppers of the world, of course, the Warren Buffetts of the world, these are investors. I've never seen anyone get on TV, one of these multi-billionaires that owns a football team and who's a day trader, okay?
Right.
Because it's the same thing. Here we are, I'm in Las Vegas, and these beautiful casinos were not built on people that won money at all. So, you know, I don't see how you can look at any given chart tick by tick and know what's happening in the next 15 minutes. I think it was can't remember who said it. It wasn't Templeton. No, he's too old for that. I can't remember who said it, but they talked about basically trying to do day trading and tick by tick trading is basically waiting on a corner and through a pattern you can guess if who's going to come around the corner next, a man or a woman. You know, it's every time it's 50%. It doesn't matter what happens. So, you know, I know there's patterns and charts and things like that that those guys use. And what's funny is because they all use them so much, they create their own pattern and then they can trade within that to make money, which is fine. But it's not a discipline that I really am, you know, skilled in any way.
Yeah.
Nor do I think it's a valid skill. You know what I mean? It's kind of like being a professional wrestler, I guess. It's like, I don't know. You're sort of doing something. I get, okay. You know, you did a great job of guessing today. Awesome. You know,
yeah.
Like, it's like, you know, being a professional wrestler. Yeah, you did a great job of looking like a professional athlete today. Great job. And I know those guys are, you know, in great shape and everything. I'm just saying, it's not, it's real. It's almost real, but not real.
Yeah.
If that makes sense. So because the discipline and effort and work it takes to build a quality portfolio for these clients, you know, and to buy these companies is the opposite of, you know, throwing a dart at the wall on any given moment of any given day and hoping that it works. You know, we're not doing this hoping that it works. We're not allocating money hoping that it works. We're allocating client capital into future earnings of companies in sectors of the economy we know are going to grow based on all the data that we have, you know? So The sensitivity of markets, yeah, I mean, it depends on your time frame, you know, and like anything else, if you're gonna trade the markets daily, sure, yeah, there's, I've known people that have done it, but you know, I've not heard of anyone who's done it, for lack of a better word, uber successfully. You know,
well, I mean, I heard it said at one point, I can't tell you which direction the next 10% move in the market is going to go, but I can tell you which direction the next 100% move in the market is going to go. I think that's a way to kind of summarize that, right? Like, over time, we know what's going to happen, given enough time. But the more you shrink that down, the more you shrink your sample size down, the less predictable it becomes. Okay, so if I'm trying
and
to
the long, and the longer term, the more predictable, right? To some extent,
exactly.
There is
exactly.
No, what do you? Here's a fun fact for your, you know, when you're, because you're going into the weekend, so you're gonna have a fun time. There is, you can share this with your friends. There is no 20-year rolling period in the market in history ever. Okay, I mean, any 20-year-old, you can start every single year and go 20 years out, where there's a negative 20-year rolling period. There's 10 years and 15 years, but no 20 years. So, yeah. You know, if your time frame is long enough, and I would say that the best example is obviously is Warren Buffett. You know, I mean, you look at our portfolios, yeah, we outperform him 6 ways from Sunday, okay?
Yeah.
But he's not trying to impress anybody. He doesn't care. He wants good companies for a very long period of time with enough money to create enough wealth where it provides stability and growth. And that's what he's trying to do. And he's absolutely the epitome of buy when blood is on the street, even when it's yours. He is the buyer of pain, and he's an expert at it. And, you know, that's what we, you know, that's what I think a good money manager does. Is I mean, I was waiting for that pullback for basically 7-8 weeks. Okay. And I got it. That was a painful day. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
For a lot of people. Okay. For me, that was an opportunity, you know, and in Japanese, crisis is a combination of two words, danger and opportunity. Crisis means danger. It's Kiki. Danger, opportunity makes the word crisis. So, you know, that's what we look for. We look for opportunity when everyone else sees crisis. You know, I mean, I can't tell you the amount of Meta and Google and Amazon and all of it, Apple, that we bought in 2022, and people thought we were nuts. You know. And we had a great year last year, you know, and because we saw, you know, and I don't mean to say that we're certainly not the only ones, good investment managers, they do that. They know, I mean, Apple, Microsoft, Amazon, they're not going anywhere. In 2022, my wife was on Amazon every day, just like she was in 2021. Okay.
That's right.
So the fact that I was getting it at a 50% discount, for me, that was an opportunity that we take, you know. So, you know, when you see these, when I started to see inflation, when I started to see the yields start to spike, you know, middle of March, and then go through that 435 in the beginning of April. Okay, we knew the market was going to have to digest that, and it wasn't going to be a straight line. It was going to pull back. So okay, so it's like a batting lineup, right? You know your Barry Bonds is sitting 3 batters back, and he's there. So you start to see the yields rise, and you start to see the market pull back, and it swings, and the market yields still rise. The market still starts to consolidate, yields rise again. And you know, okay, here it comes. And then he shows up, the market does that, basically does a pretty quick pullback. You got to nail it. And that sounds like I'm trying to time the market. I'm not. It's just, okay, the market had a fair pullback to a reasonable price against future earnings. And frankly, is probably where it should have been anyway.
But to save you from what you're trying to clarify right there, you weren't, if you were trying to time the market, you would have moved all of your clients to 100% cash 6 weeks ago or 8 weeks ago, whenever that was that we first, you know, you first made that observation. You're not trying to time the market. It was a very slow, subtle decision not to add more capital at that point, right? Professional investors make small adjustments to their strategy based on the small little dips and bumps in the, along the way, but you weren't moving everybody to cash and then you move it all right back in on April 19th. Like, you're not trying to make that kind of a move. It was just a small, you're just aware of the trend and sort of adjusting accordingly, right? Like, you're riding down the interstate. We've all had these days where, you know, people are just driving crazy and it's rainy or whatever, and you just feel like something bad's about to happen. You just kind of back off the gas and try to find yourself some room. Kind of, you don't pull over and just wait for everything to stop. You just kind of try to find yourself a little pocket and kind of avoid the chaos a little bit if you can, and be a little bit on the conservative side for a minute. But it's not overreacting either way.
Yeah, you know, and we got some communications from clients over that last 3 week period. You know, hey, you know, should we get out of the market? What's going on? Is this bad? No, it's just a little market wiggle, and yeah, earnings are strong, and rates have gone up a little bit. I expect them to roll over. That's what we're here for. We are a good advisor, a good money manager, sits between, you know, the ability of the client to make the decision and their money on their money. It's like, hey, you should go through. I mean, if you tell me to do something, of course I'll do it. But here's what we see, you know. And it's funny, newer clients when they first come in, if they don't have a lot of market experience, especially if they have, you know, maybe they inherited a lot of money, and if not, they don't have a lot of market experience, put the money in, and the market might pull back, you know, 4 or 5%. And they're, you know, if it's $2 million and the market pulls back 5%, and let's just say it's indexed to the market, well, that's, you know, $100,000. I'm down $100,000. The market, yeah, but it's not, you're down 5%. The market will come back. It's just going through, you know, we get two or three of those a year, you know. Right. And as time goes on and the data comes in clearer, it's the data and it's the economics that always are steering the market. Okay. Sometimes we get some wakes behind us here with some of the ancillary, you know, exogenous factors. But as far, you know, it's earnings and it's interest rates, and that's what moves the market.
Well, and it's all about the data.
Always has been and always will be.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you said several shows ago, trust your data. It's all about the data. At the end of the day, even the market wiggles, that's just the market trying to digest what the future data is going to be, right? It's all about data. It doesn't care who the president is. It cares about what earnings are. That's all. All right, man. Well, enjoyed it. See you in a couple of weeks. Missed you, man. Let's not go 6 weeks again.
Likewise.
Before we go, as always, nothing that we say on the show is intended to be investment advice. It is purely for entertainment and educational purposes only. We do not know you or your financial situation, so do not buy or sell anything or make any financial decisions based on what you hear me or Matt say on the show.
That is correct. If you are looking for advice or help or direction, please feel free to call ARPG.
And it will be his Matt's phone number, and all the possible ways you could ever get in touch with Matt and his team at ARPG will be in the description, whether you're seeing this on YouTube, advisoradvocates.com, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever. We'll make sure we got that in there. So give him a call if you need advice, but this is not advice. So, thanks, not Matt. I appreciate it, man.
All right. Talk to you in a couple of weeks. Mm-hmm.